Well, hi again. This is Bob Brundage. Today is July the 8th, 2010. And today we have the pleasure of talking with Kathy Burdick out in Ticonderoga, New York. And Kathy is one member of the team of Stan and Kathy. And their accomplishments over the years have been their member of the Square Dance Foundation of New England Hall of Fame. They were given the prestigious Milestone Award from Color Lab. They're also given the Silver Spur Award from the American Square Dance Society. They were very active early on in the formation of Color Lab, served on the Board of Governors, and actually operated as secretary for a while. And also somehow found a time to publish a little magazine called American Square Dance. So outside of that, they didn't have anything to do, sorry to say. But Kathy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your family background?
Okay, I was born in Bristol, Rhode Island, and grew up there until I graduated from college and went to Connecticut to work for the Girl Scouts. And my mother and dad started the Square Dance in 1948, and they went to a lot of Charlie Baldwin's dances in southern Massachusetts, and which was not very far from us. They went to his camp in 1953 up in the Berkshires, persuaded me, since I was out working and had not been home for a year, that I should go on vacation with them. And that's where I got reacquainted with Stan. I had met him at Girl Scout camp when the Girl Scouts and the Y people used to have joint square dances in, again, in southern Rhode Island. But we met again at Charlie's camp and kind of got together, went together for 2 years before we got married. My folks, in the meantime, decided the camping situation wasn't for them, and they went to the Hotel Thayer and danced with your brother Al.
Uh-huh.
And went back, I don't know exactly how many times, but they enjoyed those weekends. They liked to be a little more plush.
Right.
So that's, in a capsule, that's how I got going.
Good. Well, that answers the next question I had. What was your introduction to square dancing in the first place? So I believe you were married in 1955.
Right.
And then, according to what I've read, I think it was 1966 that you decided, you and Stan decided that you'd go into square dancing full time. And, well, before we get too far into this,
I think I have to correct you on that. It was 68.
Oh, okay.
We took over the magazine. Stan had been, he left the YMCA, and then he worked for a year setting up programs for a senior apartment building.
Uh-huh.
Square dancing being among them, of course.
Yes.
And then we had the chance to buy the magazine for a dollar from Arvid Olson.
Uh-huh.
And that was our first issue we put out was September of 1968.
Okay, so I started to say, before we get too far along, did you ever do any calling yourself?
Oh, yes, very successfully.
Uh-huh.
When we went to Camp Beckett with Charlie Baldwin, he used to run callers classes, and Stan was interested in learning more, and I went with him, as young couples do.
Huh?
I tried once there, and Charlie told me never to call again. However, over the years, we developed quite a program up here at Silver Bay, New York, which is a YMCA conference center, and we did the square dancing there for 47 years. Stan did the square dancing.
Yes.
But the evening began with a half hour of toddlers dancing, and I did that. Circles, you know, what used to be called play party games or big circles, and... then went with the middle-aged group of kids.
Yeah.
Oh, I would say 8 to 12-year-olds or so, we used to do things like the Virginia Reel. And yes, in a little later years, in the 70s, there were years when Stan was traveling, and I filled in and did the square dancing at Silver Bay. But I am not a singer, and I sort of chanted the dances, and I wasn't, I kept the program going, but it wasn't as good as Stan's, and I, you know, was never, I can teach, but I'm not a good caller.
Okay. How about, do you cue rounds?
Yes, I did that.
Did you get involved in the traditional style of dancing, or is it mostly modern Western?
No, we did a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
When we started in the old days, in the 50s, even at the square dance camps, there was folk dancing.
Yes.
And we liked pretty much all kinds of dancing.
Right.
So those were the kinds of things that we taught to children. I taught a lot of Girl Scouts over the years because I was always involved with the Girl Scout movement. I taught a lot of Girl Scouts to dance in order to get their folk dancing badge.
See?
But I could do that and cue without having to call.
Yes.
So that was easier for me to do.
Yes.
But yes, we did folk dancing, we did traditional, and what we have done up here at Silver Bay is almost always been, it's not pure traditional, but it's very easy, tight square dancing. So it was sort of a mix.
Yes.
I mean, there's a little Western flavor to the calling and the, and you know, Stan did hoedowns,
right.
But we still did some of the old traditional dances.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, let's get talking about American Square Dance Magazine. Before we get too far along, do I remember that actually went by a couple of different names at one time? I mean, wasn't it called American Squares? And then sometimes it was called American Square Dance Magazine?
Yes. It started out as American Squares.
I see.
And then I think Arvid changed it to Square Dance
Magazine. Yeah, okay.
And we didn't really like that. We thought we should keep the American word in there. So we went back, put American back in, and made Square Dance one word.
Yes, I see.
Which would have been fine for the computer age, but we were way ahead of that.
Yeah, right. Okay. And so getting back to the roots of the magazine, I believe it was Charlie Thomas that started it.
Yes, in 1945.
Okay. That I didn't know. But and I remember Ricky Holden was part of that.
I think he was a successor editor in New Jersey, yes, when he was in that area for a while. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then Frank Kaltman was also part of that in the early days, at least.
I think Frank Kaltman had it before it went out to Arvid in Chicago.
Oh, I see.
I think.
Okay. Well, I remember some of the record reviews that Kaltman used to put in.
Oh, yeah. He pulled no punches, did he?
He spoke his mind, that's for sure.
He sure did.
Yeah. If he didn't like a record, he really blessed it. But anyway, according to my estimate, you published about 275 issues.
Well, I never really multiplied it out, but it was 23 years.
Yeah.
And about 3 months.
Okay. And
we sold it at the end of 1991.
Okay, very good. Well, and what was your job in all of this? Now, as editor and publisher, you did all the grunt work?
Well, in those 23 years, most of those 23 years, Stan was building a traveling caller career as well.
Yes.
So people used to say to him, I don't know how you can travel and get the magazine out.
Yeah.
But I and the staff at home were the answer to that. We had some very good friends who came to work with us. They were all part-time, but at one time we had about six. And we managed to put the thing together. We had a lot of good contributing writers and who were very prompt about sending things in, but we got it all typeset And typesetting in those days was a lot more laborious than it is. It was less laborious than having to set the type, but it was more so than working on the computers of today. But we did that. I laid out most of the ads and things. Stan wrote his monthly meanderings and some other things. A very little known fact is that I always wrote the ads.
Uh-huh.
But Stan always wanted me to sign them, and I never would, because even in those days, I felt that no one would listen to a woman.
Okay.
So I never would put my name up. Once in a while, I wrote an article and used a pseudonym called Lib Eddie, which stood for Liberated Editor.
Oh, I see.
Now the secrets can come out, now that we're retired from it so long.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I made a note here. Of course, in those days, you had to use a typewriter, didn't you?
We started out on a typewriter, an IBM typewriter, on which you typed everything twice.
Uh-huh.
You typed it once, and a little color code came up, and then you typed it again to justify it. That's when justification was still in vogue.
I never heard of that.
And we went from that to, I suppose, an early form of computerized, where you typed in, you could see one line at a time come up, and if you caught a mistake in that one line, you were okay.
Yes.
But otherwise, you had to cut and paste your mistakes in after, I mean, your corrections.
Yes.
In afterward. We did a lot. Everything was cut and paste in those days. You made up the ads, you pasted them in place.
Right.
The articles were pasted, the backs of the articles were waxed and pasted in place on the boards.
Right.
I mean, now I'm amazed at the booklets I put together now for some organizations, and it just floats out of the computer all ready to go.
Yes, right.
Or I can put it on a CD and send it to the printer, you know.
Right.
We've come a long way, but it was fun.
Yeah.
Seeing each magazine come out was really fun. It was a very satisfying job.
I'll bet, yeah. Tell me about some of the contributors you had over the years.
Well, Bob Howell probably was with us the longest, and I think the last I knew, up until his recent death, he was still doing it when it's in Florida.
Yes.
He was doing his easy dances.
Yes.
Walt Cole wrote an article for us until his death. Those are the two I think of first because they were friends of ours.
Yes.
We had some pretty regular people. Once in a while, we ran fiction stories about square dancing, and we had a woman who used to send us, I can't for the life of me remember her name, I'm sorry, but she sent us things periodically that we used.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Okay. Well, that pretty much covers what I had in mind.
Well, in the first list of all the things you talked about, you neglected to mention legacy.
No, I'm going to be talking about, yes, I did. I had a note here and I forgot it, yes.
Well, I just wanted to mention it because that was another thing we were very involved in.
Yes, I know that. Right. Well, let's talk about that then, as long as we're here. I think you were very instrumental in the organization of Legacy in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, the three men had a meeting in Cleveland, Charlie Baldwin and Stan and Bob Osgood, and felt that there were some misdirections coming about. And that maybe we needed to get together and talk to try to keep some things. I think one of the things seemed to be hot pants, which was quite a hot item at one time, and appeared here and there at conventions or on a dance floor, and people were concerned about costumes and that kind of thing, but there were some other things happening too. And so they decided to pull together a group of leaders. Well, of course, we hosted the first one in, which was nearest to us, so at that point I immediately became involved. But we worked on it all along. We were kind of executive secretaries of it for a little bit, and then we were at one point also chairman later on.
Yes.
So we were very involved with Legacy for many years.
Right. Well, yeah. I hated to see it go, actually, because
we did a lot of leadership training. I think it was, a lot of the people in the original Legacy group went and did what they called mini legacies around in various states and talked about, you know, really being leaders, how to run a club, how to do this, how to do that.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun, too.
Well, I remember good friends up in Vermont, Peg and Doc Terrell.
Oh, yes.
They were very involved with Legacy, I know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which reminds me also that we had several different people at different times doing round dance reviews for us.
Uh-huh.
But for the magazine, and square dance reviews.
Yes.
But, I mean, record reviews.
Uh-huh.
But Doc and Peg were good friends of ours, and they I worked on many a panel at the national conventions with Peg.
Right.
We always seemed to end up together. And of course, she was an old Girl Scout, too, so we had a lot in common.
Oh, yes.
But,
right.
They did a lot. They did a lot for square dancing.
Yes. Well, they're a wonderful couple. I hated to see Doc pass away. But
yes.
Okay, well, along about the same time you mentioned that Stan was doing a lot of traveling. You must have done some along the way yourself. I understand you also ran some cruises and, you know, trips where you took dancers along with you.
Yeah. The way we could do that, well, we would work like crazy ahead of time, do all we could, and then the staff was very good about carrying on and getting things done. When we sold the magazine after 23 years, I was very proud to say that we had never missed a deadline.
Uh-huh.
It always came out on time, but we did. We took 20 tours before we were through. We had had the magazine about 5 years when Stan got itchy feet and thought we could run a trip to Australia. That was the first one.
Uh-huh.
In 1973. And on the way to Australia, we stopped in Hawaii to refuel. And Hawaii was so beautiful, we took people back there. And eventually ended up going to Africa, China. And that was in the days when travel was easy and tour agents were looking for groups that wanted to travel together.
Right.
So the perks were good, and they did everything they could to ensure a nice trip. And we really enjoyed that.
Well, okay. Well, and so Stan, I guess, did some traveling by himself.
There was no way I could travel with him as a traveling caller. He called in every state and every province of Canada, because after we moved up here, he even got to go to Newfoundland for a weekend. I went along on that one.
Okay.
But most of all, I think there have only been two countries. He went to Panama to do a dance with Bill Bailey. I could always remember that because of the song. But Bill Bailey was a well-known caller, always came to conventions and was in Panama. So Stan went down there, and I didn't get to go to that one and see the Panama Canal.
Right.
But then when we were in Africa, I went up in a balloon, and my balloon came down in a different country than Stan's. So I've got one country down too. But we always had this little thing going. But when he was going somewhere really exciting, I mean, out of the country and stuff, those were mostly joint trips.
Right.
But he would travel a lot in this country. I can't think of the caller's name that lived in Lake Tahoe in State Line. Oh, it's gone. He said, I used to sit down and read Meanderings, and then I'd have to go take a nap.
Yes. Yeah, I remember reading them as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But Stan loved it. He loved to travel.
Yeah.
And,
along the same line, how about conventions and national conventions and festivals and things?
Yeah. I think we went to every national convention while we had the magazine.
Uh-huh.
We started, the first one we went to was Seattle in 1969. And in those days, our kids were, our daughter didn't go with us at first. She was too young, but the two boys went with us and helped us in the booth.
Uh-huh.
So it became a family affair. And then later on, we took usually a staff member with us. So,
right.
And we always ended up on, we had to have somebody to cover the booth because we would end up on panels and things.
Yes. Well, and along at the same time, you still maintain a home club program.
Yes. We had, Stan wasn't doing it all. He did for a while. The clubs seemed to come and go, but we did have a, once we got to know a lot of traveling callers, we had a Monday night dance right in the little town we lived in Ohio at the church across the street, and had a lot of people. They would stop there, you know, on their way home from a weekend of traveling or something. So we hosted a lot of callers there.
Right.
And that was fun. We had a lot of friends and acquaintances from all over the country, and even a few, you know, from overseas.
Uh-huh.
I was in the Amsterdam airport one day, coming back from one of our trips, and I heard someone saying, "Kathy, Kathy, Kathy," and I turned around and it was Jack Fronson's wife. They knew us from conventions, we went to Round Lab once, we knew them from that.
Yeah.
So you never knew, you know, where people were going to turn up. But the Square Dance community was a great one. I mean, people were...
Oh, sure.
People were close and friendly. And yeah. I know my folks found that just in their small community. They had quite a group they traveled with.
Uh-huh.
And, they got together and socialized other than the square dancing, but they all square danced together, and it was great. And our community, because of the magazine, spanned the country. It was different, but it was the same in a way.
Yes. Well, you had overseas subscribers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, what about Kathy today? When I originally contacted you, we had a date to do this last Saturday. And all of a sudden, you sent me an email and said that you had to postpone that because you had a
fundraiser.
A fundraiser for a festival guide.
Mm-hmm. I have a part-time job still as director of the Ticonderoga Festival Guild, which sounds like a... actually, what we do is put on six evening concerts in the summertime. The first one was Tuesday night, and six free programs for children on Wednesday mornings in the performing arts. And last Saturday, we were outside Walmart here putting people in jail raising money. People had to jail to get them out of jail.
Right.
So we raised about $100 an hour, because we made $507.
Oh, good.
For Ticonderoga, that's good. Doesn't sound tremendous, but that's good. So that's another interesting job. It's a fun job. Before we had come to this area a long time before we decided to retire up here, but I remember reading in the paper once about this festival guild, and they were advertising for a director. This was in the early 90s, and I thought, well, that's a job I could do.
Yeah.
But in 1997, they lost the director they had, and our choir director knew me and said, "Would you just come and get us through the summer?" And I've been there ever since. So,
good.
But it's fun. But again, that's, you know, we book the artists, they come, they do the programs. It's not a lot of work. I have some young people that do the grunt work for me, so I don't work hard at it.
Well,
most of it's mental, writing grants, and, you know, the work goes on all year with trying to raise the money and stuff to support it, but
right.
It's a fun job.
What about any other community work? How about your church?
Well, I've run a discussion group at the church since fall of 1993 when we moved up here. We've met once a week. We don't meet in the summer, but we meet once a week. We've discussed different books, sometimes really religious, but sometimes just social issues and things.
Yeah.
And I've been an elder. Stan's a deacon right now. I also do their newsletter every 2 months.
Patrick.
Some things you never get out of, you know.
Yes, right. So
I was active with Girl Scouts until about 2005, and then I had to drive an hour to council meetings and things, and then they merged with another council, so they're now way down, it spans Albany to the Canadian border, and that's more driving than I want to do at night and stuff now, so I sort of backed out. So I don't have any commitment to Girl Scouts. I belong to a book club, and I have the church discussion.
Yeah, you know, I just realized I don't think I ever asked anybody of all these interviews I did, are you involved in politics at all?
No.
Locally? Right, no.
No.
I don't know why, it just came to my mind, but...
I'm mouthy about it sometimes, but that's as far as it goes.
Right.
I mean, I do contact people.
Yeah.
But, no, I've never gotten involved with politics.
Okay. Do you have any regrets? Is there anything you wish you'd done differently?
No, there are a couple places I would have liked to have gotten to before I... Traveling is difficult now. I stopped square dancing in 97. Yeah, I have regrets that I can't still dance. I have a very arthritic leg with some sort of a sciatic involvement, so I limp a little. And if I try to square dance, which I've done a few times, I just pay for it the next day, so I've learned to take it easy. But music still sets my feet tapping, and I would like to be able to get up and dance. But that's the most regret I have.
Right. Well, you certainly had an active life, that's for sure. And square dance community should thank you profusely for all you've done.
Well, it was great fun, and I owe a lot to square dancing. It put the magazine, we always said, put three kids through college and took us around the world. And what more could you ask? We got a great deal from it while we were, I hope, contributing something.
Well, which leads into my next question, and that is, what do you consider your most worthy accomplishments?
Oh, my. One of the things I think, and I don't know, I shouldn't maybe say anything because I don't know about the present state of square dancing, but one of the things that I felt I really had a hand in changing was that I kept saying it was all right to wear periskirts to square dance and you didn't have to wear the big petticoats if you didn't want to.
Yes.
I think we did a lot of things, and they're hard to judge. It's like being asked to judge the effects of our arts program up here, and I keep telling the grant people, you really can't judge. You don't know what effect you're having on those children till they grow up. I don't know what effect all those leadership clinics for Legacy had on people.
Uh-huh.
But I suspect you don't go to a weekend like that where friendships are formed and people get closer to each other and they listen to all these ideas and things without it changing something. Except that I can't measure what it changed. All I can do is hope that it did, you know?
Yes.
So I would consider some of those. I mean, we did some together. Stan did some alone. I was very proud a couple of times when I got asked to do one by myself. And we can only hope that all of that material that we tried to dispense had some effect on people in or out of square dancing.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's what I would have to say.
Which brings up what happened to all that material that you put out? Is it still around? I mean, is some of these copies still available somewhere?
The square dancing? The magazines, you mean?
No, the training manuals and things like that. Now that you're not involved in American Squares and sets and orders gone and...
Well, the archives, you know, Bill Lichman's archives have copies of everything.
Yes.
And they have copies of all our books, so I presume they have the leadership manuals and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I think the Square Dance Foundation, that's what we took over a few years back. We made a trip to Manchester with a whole bunch of stuff and took a lot of that kind of stuff over to the foundation.
Yes.
So there are places like that where things are, you know, where the information is still available.
Yeah. How about the, I think USDA, do they have any of that material, or does Collard have any of it, you know?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really have no idea. I've lost contact completely with the USDA, whether they have set up an archives or not, I don't know.
Yeah. Were you ever involved with them?
Not really.
No.
They were kind of competitors of Legacy.
Uh-huh.
It was sort of, you know, I don't know if you were one of...
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I never thought of it that way, but the friendly competitors.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about Arch? Did you ever get involved with that?
No.
Yeah. Well, of course, that just came along recently, and sort of after your time.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah, Stan has membership in Collard Lab, but where, you know, he's not,
yes,
not active or anything in it, and I've lost track. I decided in 1997, we tried to train another couple to take over the square dancing at Silver Bay. They did it for about a year and gave it up. And Stan went back. He's still doing the Monday night dances down there. But I, at that point, I had given my records to Sarah, and she passed them on to Silver Bay. And so I never went back to it at all. I said to Stan, I said I was going to retire from it, and I've retired. So I haven't done anything at all, and we haven't been active. So I don't really even know what's out there. I read the Collard Lab bulletins when they come through on email.
Yeah.
But that's about the extent of it. So.
Well, yeah. I usually ask everyone that I talk to give you some kind of an indication, even though you've been out of square dancing recently. You have any idea where you think square dancing might be going?
Well, yes. I don't know. From this area, there is a very active group of square dancers called the Hudson Valley Dancers.
Uh-huh.
And Ralph Sweet from Connecticut came up to call for them.
Yes.
It's got to be about 7 or 8 years ago, down in Lake George at the YMCA camp. And he said, why don't you come down and drop in? So we went down on the Friday night, and I was very encouraged by what I saw. It's a little more traditional than what we used to see, but, and it was fast. I mean, there was almost no way I could even keep up with it. But those people were having an enormous amount of fun.
Yeah.
And they're a strong group. They run special weekends. They have a dance flurry in Saratoga every year. That's a huge event.
Yeah.
And they've had some dances up at Silver Bay, this same group. They're very strong in the area. And I think, you know, I don't think we're ever going to see square dancing again in the shape it was in that we experienced in the 60s and 70s with the formal costumes. There's still Western groups around with the costumes. There's a group up north of us, up near the Canadian line, and I see their pictures in the paper and everything. But they're a small group. They're a very active group, but they're smaller. But I think what we'll see maybe is more, this group here in our area almost goes back to the late 40s, where you could walk in and square dance.
Yes.
And I was amazed at the enthusiasm. I mean, it made me very hopeful. I said, well, square dancing isn't going to die out when these, and they love the contra dance. So groups like that, I think, will keep it alive. And maybe we'll see another widespread, movement of the kind that, you know, Lloyd Shore started again. But, But I don't think it'll ever be, well, things don't. They recycle, but they don't come back in the same shape they were in. We won't see it exactly the way it was
in our
heyday.
Right. Well, of course, you were in it boom times, and
right.
Most of the people that I have talked with, the old-timers, as I say, usually contend that they just happened to get into the square dance thing at exactly the right time.
Right, right. We kind of grew up with it.
Yes, just after World War II. And
mm-hmm.
And I know in New England, not in New England when Herb Gregerson came through and introduced us to Do Paso and Alamandar.
No.
That was the beginning of
Western style.
Yeah, Western style square dancing.
A man named Jim from Texarkana came to Beckett, and he started it there. This was after Herb Gregerson. I remember hearing about Herb Gregerson, but I never met him. But we got the square dance magazines way back then.
Yes.
And, you know, my folks got them. So we used to see all these names and knew them. I can't think of this Jim's last name, but he came to Beckett as the guest Western caller.
Uh-huh.
And he was the one who introduced us to that. And I can remember the hard time we had learning some of those calls.
Yes, right.
We worked and worked and worked until we got them right. But
yes. It's a funny story about learning some of the complicated figures. When Teacup Chain came out, my brother and his wife were at my house in Connecticut, and we had just heard about Teacup Chain, and so we were all sitting on the living room floor. It was Halloween time, so we had red and black jelly beans that we put, so we tried to move these jelly beans around to learn how to do Teacup Chain. And all of a sudden, they realized that one of them was missing. And so we just replaced it, and it went on another time. And a little later, another jelly bean was gone. Going to find out my little puppy that I had was sneaking in while we were all talking and grabbing one and escaping with it. But
well, one of my early memories of square dancing, and I didn't always go with my folks because I didn't always have somebody to dance with.
Yeah.
One of their friends had a son my age that I went with sometimes to the dances. But I can remember them coming home, and the next morning there would be great discussion in the kitchen, which was the only room big enough, and they would be trying out the round dances, the in-between dances. They were almost sort of folk dances. I mean, Road to the Isles and some of those. But trying to work those out again the next morning.
Right.
So
I guess we all went through that.
I guess so.
Yeah. Was the caller that you were referring to Texas Jim Brower by any?
Yes. Brower just left my memory.
Yeah.
Yes, Jim Brower.
Yeah, I played golf with him several times when he came through. But yeah, he was a good caller.
Right. Well, we were in Connecticut with you. You probably remember us from the Connecticut callers.
Oh yes, Connecticut callers.
From 55 to 59, and then we moved to Ohio.
Yes, right. No, I remember that. And of course you remember Fran, who's gone.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But so, well, I think I've covered most of the questions that I had.
Okay, well, I thank you.
Well, how about you? You must have some things that I might have missed that you'd like to tell us about.
I don't know. I think you pretty well covered everything, Bob. I can't think of anything else.
Okay. Well, I certainly do thank you for taking the time to sit down with me this morning and this afternoon for you.
Right.
I certainly wish you a lot of luck in all of your future endeavors, and I'm sure you're going to continue your community work and
As long as I can.
And your local people will be the beneficiaries of all your hard work.
All right.
So, again, so thank you very much, Kathy. And with that, why don't we call this the end of the tape?